I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Warning signs. Israel orders the evacuation of thousands of people from a city in the Gaza Strip. What it could mean for the peace process. History on the Hill. New developments in the attempt to remove Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. Focus on the faithful. Lawmakers approve a measure to fund security for churches and synagogues. And a friendly reminder why Pope Francis is praising the gift of friendship. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, this could be one of the most pivotal days in the seventh-month war between Israel and Hamas. Late this afternoon, Hamas Supreme Leader Ismail Haniyeh agreed to an Egyptian and Qatari-led ceasefire proposal. Israel is reportedly reviewing the latest offer, but one official said that it was a softened version of the deal that it had previously agreed to. The ceasefire news broke just hours after Israeli officials ordered evacuations for 100,000 people living in Rafah. And another phone call between President Biden and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the president once again expressing his concern about an invasion of Rafah on humanitarian grounds. And for more, let's bring in John Gambrill, Associated Press News Director for the Gulf and Iran. John, good to be with you today. So what exactly did Hamas agree to, and where does Israel stand on the proposal?
Tracy, what we heard from Hamas is that they say that they agreed to a Qatari and Egyptian mediated deal that would go over weeks. And basically, first it would see the sick and the women who are still held by Hamas released in exchange for more Palestinian prisoners and a halt in fighting. The last phase of it would see military aged men and Israeli soldiers released in exchange for what they described as a permanent calm. That came out. We saw people in the streets of Gaza celebrating, but hours later we heard from the Israeli war cabinet. They say they voted to go ahead with this offensive targeting Rafah, that city where so many of the people in the Gaza Strip have fled to as the Israeli offensive has gone on. The Israelis did say, however, that they would go ahead and send mediators on to Cairo. That's where these talks have been going on. So right now, the ceasefire remains in the balance, and the people of Gaza are waiting to see what's going to happen next, Tracy.
John, what kind of impact does this announcement by Hamas have on Israel? I mean, do you think it's putting Israel sort of in a corner, effectively saying, you know, agreeing to something they didn't really want in the first place? Or do you think it makes Israel appear to be the bad guy if the attacks in Gaza continue?
Experts that we've spoken to over the last couple of weeks have described this as being basically a game of brinksmanship. Over the last few weeks, we've seen leaks, we've seen other officials come out and make comments about these ceasefire negotiations. And it also, you know, it doesn't happen in a vacuum as well. In Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu has faced a lot of political pressure even before the war over how he was trying to change the judiciary. Now, with these hostages being held, all those political forces that had sort of been against Netanyahu and the more hardline elements in the Israeli government that had supported his coalition government, they have come out. Even tonight, we saw hundreds of people on the streets in Tel Aviv again protesting, demanding that these hostages be released, some demanding that Netanyahu step down no matter what. So it comes at a very delicate political time for Israel and for Hamas as well. They are down to basically a few battalions of their fighters left. They've shot through a lot of their ammunition, and a lot of them are trapped in Rafah. So for both sides, it's really just a delicate time, and both sides have reasons to take the ceasefire and have reasons not to, Tracy.
John, before I let you go, quickly, what is the latest with the IDF's Operation Rafah?
As of right now, they say tonight that they're conducting strikes on Rafah. We don't have any other information whether that involves ground forces or not. Over the last day, we've seen at least 22 people killed in Rafah. The Israelis dropped these leaflets telling people to flee and going to another area just to the north, but that area has few tents, and the United Nations Refugee Agency for the Palestinians had warned that if people are forced to move out of Rafah, that all that we'll see is more civilian suffering and more civilian deaths. Tracy.
John Gambrill with the Associated Press, thank you so much. We appreciate it. So how is the Biden administration responding to a potential ceasefire? For months, top officials have been calling for a break in the fighting. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and CIA Director Bill Burns have flown to the Middle East multiple times, pushing for a peace deal, the release of hostages, and an increase in humanitarian aid. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Tracy, good evening. As you mentioned earlier, President Joe Biden did speak with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu this morning. Then later today, word breaks that Hamas saying yes to a ceasefire deal. But hold on, right now, all sides are still looking at it, and the White House does not want to get ahead of the process.
Smoke in the sky rising from a blast in eastern Rafah in Gaza, where Israel has ordered thousands of Palestinians to evacuate due to a possible ground invasion being imminent. But now, with word a ceasefire may have been reached, National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby went before reporters in the White House press briefing room.
We are at a critical stage right now. We got a response from Hamas. Now Director Burns is working through that, trying to assess it, working with the Israelis. I mean, my goodness, folks, I don't know that it gets any more sensitive than right now.
And what does a ceasefire mean for freeing the hostages still held by Hamas?
Hopefully, whatever's in this thing, hopefully it can lead to those hostages getting out real soon with their families where they need to be. And As each day passes, their lives get further at risk. So time is really of the essence here.
Israel's closest allies, including the U.S., have repeatedly warned that Israel should not attack Rafah. The looming operation has raised global alarm. At the State Department, this assessment.
And we believe a military operation in Rafah right now would dramatically increase the suffering of the Palestinian people, would lead to an increase in loss of civilian life, would dramatically disrupt the delivery of humanitarian assistance.
The news of the potential ceasefire arriving as King Abdullah of Jordan visited the White House Monday for a private lunch meeting with President Joe Biden. On Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected international pressure to halt the war in Gaza in a speech marking the country's annual Holocaust Memorial Day.
I say to the leaders of the world, no amount of pressure, no decision by any international forum will stop Israel from defending itself.
Now, multiple reports say the United States put a hold on military aid going to Israel last week. But John Kirby was asked about that today during the White House press briefing. He said support for Israel's security remains, in his words, ironclad, and he would not get into specifics on one shipment over another. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Oh, Russia says amid further involvement from the West in the war with Ukraine, it will hold drills simulating the use of tactical nuclear weapons. The Russian Defense Ministry says the exercises are in response to statements and possible threats from officials in the West. This follows comments by French president saying that he does not rule out sending troops to Ukraine, even though Russia's strategic nuclear forces hold regular exercises. This marks the first time the nation has publicly announced nuclear drills. And following talks with his Chinese counterpart, French President Emmanuel Macron said that he welcomes Beijing's commitment not to sell weapons to Russia. President Xi Jinping and his wife officially met Macron this morning. The group watched a military ceremony at the Invalides in Paris. Leaders discussed trade issues in a meeting with the European Commission president. Xi's state visit marks the 60th anniversary of diplomatic relations between the countries. After his stop in France, Xi will head to Serbia and Hungary. Well, it is critical at a historic week on Capitol Hill as the future of House Speaker Mike Johnson hangs in the balance. Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene says that she plans to call for a vote on her motion to remove the speaker, but it is unclear how much support she actually has. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with the latest. Eric?
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, this has been a month in the making. The Georgia congresswoman said that the final straw was when Speaker Johnson pushed through a foreign aid package last month that helped Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan and did nothing for the crisis at the southern border. She also claims that the speaker compromised too much with Democrats.
He voted against funding Ukraine. He was solidly pro-life. He voted to secure the border. He voted to fight against Democrats fight against the witch hunt against President Trump. But once he became Speaker, he has become a man that none of us recognize.
Congressman Thomas Massie and Paul Gosar are the only backers of Green's attempt to oust the Speaker. Congressman Gosar tells me Democrats are going to help block the effort.
And the numbers aren't frankly there when you have people like Spanberger, who's got 25 people supposedly behind her to help him out, if you were ever to take it down. I think you have to be smart in playing your hand.
Earlier today, Speaker Johnson would only say,
I'm just going to keep doing my job.
Many Republicans oppose the push to remove Johnson and do not want to see the conference devolve into bitter infighting like it did after former Speaker Kevin McCarthy was ousted last fall.
Marjorie is outraged that Democrats have said that they're not going to participate in it, and therefore, it's Democrats saving the Speaker. The ridiculous part is that she would need every single Democrat to join her in the effort to remove the Speaker.
She's not acting in the best interests of President Trump. I don't think this is a good move 6 months before an election. She's always been about herself primarily, and she holds, a personal animosity towards anyone she deems responsible for the former Speaker not being in place.
House Democratic leaders say that they will vote to kill Green's plan and try to keep Johnson as Speaker, but they're hands off with their members.
We've made clear this is a vote of conscience, that every single member of the House Democratic Caucus will make a decision on based on their assessment of the situation.
A vote may be called either tomorrow or Wednesday of this week. However, just today, the Georgia Congresswoman and Speaker Johnson had a closed-door meeting. Now, it's interesting because Marjorie Taylor Greene was some 21 minutes late to that meeting. We have to wait and see what happens and what comes out of it. Meanwhile, we also want to let you know that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced a substantial increase in funds to a grant program. The program allows places of worship like synagogues and even Catholic churches to apply for funds to help with their security efforts, including paying for security guards. The nonprofit security grant program allocated $305 million last year to nonprofits to help protect their facilities from potential attacks. Now, $400 million is available. The money comes after Catholic churches have been vandalized following the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe and threats against Muslim and Christian communities fueled by the Israeli-Hamas war. Houses of worship will need to apply by May 21st to tap into the first round of funds. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
It is day 12 of the former president's hush money trial. Today's proceedings began with a judge fining Donald Trump $1,000 for violating a gag order. The judge also warned of jail time for future violations. A former top Trump executive testified about his role in the payments the former president made that led to charges that he falsified business records. Well, voters in Panama elected a new president. Their choice, a former security minister who has not served in an official capacity in a decade.
Con el voto mayoritario del pueblo panameño, duélale a quien le duela.
A winner, Jose Raul Molino, recently said that he had basically retired from political life. His campaign emphasized reviving the South American country's lacking economy. He also wants to address Panama's soaring migration. More than three quarters of the country's 3 million voters cast a ballot this year. Back, we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including class dismissed. Columbia University cancels its main graduation ceremony amid widespread protests. And hear from a Holocaust survivor and why she credits part of her survival to a Catholic school. Welcome back. Today marks Holocaust Remembrance Day, a day to commemorate the 6 million Jewish lives lost, killed at the hands of the Nazis in World War II, and the survivors. The Vatican released a list last year of more than 150 women's and men's religious congregations who house Jewish people fleeing Nazi persecution. Those orders mostly were based in Rome. Catholics in Hungary and in Poland also tried to protect Jewish people from the Nazis. One survivor is set to release a book about her life and her experiences, including her time at an all-boys Catholic school during the Holocaust. Joining us now is Carmela Waldman, a Holocaust survivor and author of the book Surviving the Survivor. Carmela, thank you so much for being here today. So what goes through your mind today as we reflect upon the Holocaust Remembrance Day? And why do you think it's so important not to forget that dark time, especially now?
Every year around this time, I become a little bit more emotionally involved with my Holocaust background. And this year, especially considering the outside events.
And Carmela, what goes through your mind also when you see what's transpiring right now across college campuses here in the U.S. and also across the world?
Look, anti-Semitism has been with us for the last 2,000 years. I was just remembering that years ago, Jewish schools were guarded with machine guns and armed personnel. Now it's flaring up to unprecedented proportions, and it saddens me. And I think part of it is because of the lack of education about the Holocaust and what can happen when people become uncontrolled and uncontrollable. And even if they are a small, small minority, such as on the United States campuses, it still becomes a very sad situation for the Jews.
Indeed. And you survived the Holocaust in part by seeking refuge in a Catholic boys' school. Tell us about that experience and how that trauma helped to shape you.
I was 1 month short of 5 years old when I was literally ripped away from my mother and placed with a very kind mother superior and a group of nuns in an all-boys school in the town where I'm from. And the experience taught me, believe it or not, I know all the Christian prayers in Hungarian because that was the language we used. And I learned all the customs. And I was part of that school for 6 months. And that was a very fun experience for me in many ways. After I adjusted to being away from my mother, because the nuns were very loving and very caring. And there were also other who I call righteous Gentiles who saved me. One of them was an eye doctor who brought me to the nuns. He was a benefactor of these nuns, and he asked them if they're willing to take the risk. And even though they knew that they could be hung or shipped off to a concentration camp or just shot on the spot, they took the risk and they all went along with the danger, went along with saving me in spite of all the danger. So I'm forever grateful to them.
Well, and Carmela, we are looking forward to reading that book, indeed. Thank you so much for your time today and speaking with us. God bless you.
Thank you for having me, and God bless you, too.
While Surviving the Survivor, a brutally honest conversation about life and death with my mom, a Holocaust survivor, therapist, and my podcast co-host, is set to be released next week by Post Hill Press. So check that out. Well, following massive campus-wide protests, Columbia University is canceling its main graduation ceremony. University officials made that announcement, adding that they will instead focus on the smaller school-level commencement exercises. They say this decision was based on feedback from students who said school-based celebrations were most meaningful to them. In the wake of the protests, Columbia has canceled in-person classes. Well, the Attorney General of New York is suing a pro-life group. Local media report that Democrat Letitia James is targeting Heartbeat International and 11 crisis pregnancy centers. She accuses them of misleading women and potentially endangering them by claiming they can provide a treatment reversing the effects of the abortion drug mifepristone. We will continue to follow the story for you. Our residents are beginning to return to their homes in the Houston, Texas area following major flooding there. Nearly 2 feet of rain fell on areas northeast of Houston over the past week. Some neighborhoods along the San Jacinto River are still cut off by flooded roadways. Nearly a half a dozen school districts are closed. Efforts are underway to determine how many homes were damaged. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Christ is risen. How the Orthodox faithful in Jerusalem and elsewhere celebrated Easter this past weekend. Plus, what the Vatican is saying about the Olympic Games this summer. Orthodox Christians around the world celebrated Easter over the weekend at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. The faithful took part in the traditional service of the Holy Fire. And in Serbia, throngs of people took part in the midnight liturgy led by the Serbian Patriarch. In Russia, thousands attended liturgy at Christ the Savior in Moscow. Among the attendees was Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Orthodox and Eastern Rite use the Julian calendar and often have a different date for Easter from the Latin Rite. The Pope Francis reminds the faithful to thank the Lord for our friends.
Il Signore ci vuole bene, come amico. Ci vuole così.
And his Sunday address to pilgrims at the Vatican, the Holy Father quoted the Book of Proverbs, saying, "Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from their earnest help." Pope Francis also says that Jesus wants to share in the gift of friendship with us, adding that he is offering to share what is dearest to him, a relationship with God. Our preparations are well underway for the 2024 Olympic Games later this summer in Paris. Among those gearing up is the Vatican and the French Embassy to the Holy See. They are combining to host an event on sports and spirituality. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Tannhauser has more.
The Church doesn't seek to control sports or create an alternative sport, but to humanize it through a Christian vision of sports.
With the 2024 Summer Olympics fast approaching, an international conference on sports and spirituality is being organized by the Dicastery for Culture and Education and the Embassy of France to the Holy See. The Church's relationship with sports is well documented. The Second Vatican Council's document on the Church in the Modern World, Gaudium et Spes, has a direct mention of it. Pope Francis himself has a great love of soccer, inviting Argentina's men national team after winning the 2022 World Cup final. In a speech in 2013, the Holy Father expressed this sentiment. The bond between the Church and the world of sports is a beautiful reality that has strengthened over time, for the ecclesial community sees in sports a powerful instrument for the integral growth of the human person. Cardinal Mendonça expressed a similar sentiment.
It is within this spiritual experience that its true significance is realized. Hence, we find it crucial to intertwine the sports experience with spirituality, including listening to the Word and praying, because in the movement of the body, there is also a pursuit of God.
The future conference aims to address the relationship between the Church and sports through the shared testimony of athletes. At the same time, it will focus on the relationship between man and sports, with a group of speakers reflecting on sports in terms of pedagogical, philosophical, sociological, and theological relevance. The Embassy of France to the Holy See plays a central role in this event. In the current context of wars ravaging our world, Ambassador Florence Morgin explained, "Olympism is first and foremost a message of peace, and the commitment of the Universal Church, as well as that of France, is essential."
Sports and the Olympics are indeed moments of great effort, performance and achievement. But everything is based on the respect for others, the respect for different nations, and the respect for each other's performance. The game can be individual or collective, but it is about doing something together. As you know, the Olympic motto is faster, higher, stronger. But also the word together can be added to the motto, and that completely sums up the philosophy of the Olympics.
During the press conference, the possibility of a global ceasefire during the Summer Olympic Games was also discussed. Cardinal José Tolentino de Mendoza reiterated that hope to EWTN News nightly.
The Olympic truce, which is one of the most beautiful expressions of the Olympic spirit, is a seed of peace planted in this world. Amidst all conflicts and divisions, it is a moment during which hands are freed from weapons to build peace. And this offers hope that the Olympic truce may inspire political and human truces, making the world a more fraternal place, as Pope Francis continually urges.
In Rome, Andreas Thonhauser, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.